The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For tonight are about the purpose of our practice and some of the support for that. Can you all hear me all right? Okay, thanks. You know, it can be so useful when doing mindfulness and meditation practice to stay in touch with why you're practicing. Your sense of purpose could, of course, change or evolve over time, but coming back to why am I doing this frequently and keeping it in mind, remembering it, can inspire your motivation to meditate and to practice. And it can nourish yourself and others with whom you come into contact through difficult moments and also through joys. So I've found it helpful through the years to mentally state, as I begin a sitting or a day, what my purpose is for that sitting or an intention. So it could be as simple as, may I cultivate kindness, or may I pay attention to the breath. Or it could be something like, may I take care with what I tell myself internally. So it could be a purpose related to that particular sitting or that particular day, or it could be a longer term purpose that I repeat every day, every sitting. And, you know, one of the key teachings of the Buddha that comes down to us through the suttas is from what was said to be his first Dharma talk, which offered this foundational set of guideposts to help us with our practice. So the foundation is called the Four Noble Truths. How many people have heard of the Four Noble Truths before? Great. Okay. These aren't beliefs, they aren't rules, they aren't dogma that we have to follow, but rather they're pointers to big categories of where we can pay attention and explore in our lives. And the Four Noble Truths help us by asking, where does it hurt? What's not working? And then gives us ways to explore the causes of that difficulty and to help us toward the cure. So this medical kind of analogy is actually useful because, you know, just as a doctor, when you go to visit a doctor, the first thing they ask you is for your symptoms. You know, one of the reasons we practice is to cure certain symptoms. And we can get acquainted, you know, this first step of getting deeply acquainted with what is stressful or what causes suffering in our lives. We can then use mindfulness and meditation as a kind of skillful medicine to set the conditions in motion for freedom, for greater ease in our lives. The same way a doctor might prescribe medication to help set the conditions in motion for healing. And it's important for us to recognize that we as meditators, doctors and patients, don't really control the body. They set the conditions in motion. So we set the conditions in motion for freedom through this practice. These Four Noble Truths are considered to be comprehensive. In some sense, they contain all of the other teachings, the way a great big container can hold a lot of smaller pieces. And it's a way of seeing the big picture that helps us keep a sense of perspective with the wide variety of experiences that come up as we go through our daily lives and practice. So I'll give you a couple different translations of these Four Noble Truths. One is from Tanisaru Bhikkhu, who's known around IMC as Tanjeff. And his rendition of the sutta that gives the Four Noble Truths is given as, stress should be known. The cause by which stress comes into play should be known. The diversity of stress should be known. The result of stress should be known. The cessation of stress should be known. The path of practice for the cessation of stress should be known. So, pointing out, you know, pay attention to what hurts, pay attention to what causes that, pay attention along the way, the path of practice, and pay attention to the variations in that. Another translation is Gil Fronsdal's rendition of it from the book that's in the front entrance by the donation box, The Issue of at Hand, which is freely offered here. You can take a copy with you if you haven't done that before. So here's his rendition. One, suffering occurs. Two, the cause of suffering is craving. Three, the possibility for ending suffering exists. Four, the cessation of suffering can be attained through the Noble Eightfold Path. So we could think of these four guidelines as a roadmap, showing us the way from which we can gradually emerge from being caught up in our experiences and the conditioning that causes stress and keeps us trapped or unsatisfied in our lives. The Four Noble Truths show us a way to move from feeling enslaved or worn down or compulsively reactive to the particular conditions of human life towards a feeling of freedom or an ability to live with more ease. So taken together, these truths are helping us explore cause and effect, helping us see what leads to what, so we can begin to make choices that lead us towards liberation. So why noble truths? Noble is not a word we use a lot anymore. But what it means in this case is that these practices help us move towards a nobility of spirit and action, a way to live that embodies the highest in our human potential. In this way, it's the path from being trapped in the struggle of day-to-day human life towards feeling inspired and being an inspiration, hence the Four Noble Truths. So we travel through this practice in stages, and you know, it's not necessarily clearly delineated, but there are definitely things you can notice. Like you might start out in a state of utter misery or mild discontent or both, you know, misery in some areas of your life, mild discontent in others. And as you continue, you may experience some moments of real suffering, you know, really feeling it. Some moments of relief might start to creep in as you do more meditation and mindfulness practice. And sometimes you're going to plunge back into those unhelpful old habits that cause stress. As you go along further and practice more, you might experience times when you feel a little bit of freedom, a little bit more ease. And ultimately, this builds and builds. So my understanding is at the final stage, a big leap is required that finally and fully integrates our understanding of these truths in such a way that we never slip back into suffering again. We become instead noble, fully liberated, and actually the embodiment of these Four Noble Truths. So we're walking around being the Four Noble Truths. We start by simply hearing these ideas and developing an intellectual understanding of them. One, suffering occurs. Two, the cause of suffering is craving, and figuring out what that means. Three, the possibility for ending suffering exists. Four, the cessation of suffering can be attained through the Noble Eightfold Path. So after we have that intellectual understanding, then we begin to find it in our experience and maybe study it, feel it in our meditation, notice what's happening in our daily life, and seeing how it works. So the particulars of how you experience stress or suffering in your life. Gradually, you begin to see the possibility of making different choices that free you. And eventually, you know, first you notice the possibility, and eventually you're actually able to act on those choices and experience freedom. So this process ultimately leads to such a thoroughly integrated understanding that it's actually felt in the body, heart, and mind at once. It just, we embody it right there in the middle of living. So its process is a little bit like learning any new skill. You know, think about what it was like to learn a car, to learn to drive a car, or play a sport, or play a musical instrument. At first, you know you don't have the skill. And you start with trying to understand what you need to do. Next, you practice the skill a lot. And in that process, you troubleshoot what doesn't go well. And, you know, figure out how to do it more skillfully. And you make unskillful moves and mistakes in the process. Finally, the skill becomes so well understood and well practiced that you don't really have to consciously think about it. So those of you who drove here, you probably didn't have to think about how to drive a car to get here. It's become embodied competence. So perhaps you've had the experience that's, you know, as another way to describe it is through learning theory. So first is called unconscious incompetence, where you know you don't know how to do it. Or, excuse me, you don't know what you don't know. Next, conscious incompetence, where you know you don't have the skill, it actually feels awkward to start to try to do it. To conscious competence, where you begin to have experiences of trying to do the skill and it actually works out and you're consciously doing it. Finally, in learning theory, it moves to what's called unconscious competence. But since Buddhism isn't big on lack of mindfulness or unconsciousness, I think actually the more accurate way to say this would be embodied competence, where the skill feels so automatic, you perform it perfectly well without having to think about it. So tonight I'll offer some examples of how the Four Noble Truths might guide us in working through some specific common forms of stress or suffering. So the first noble truth, suffering occurs. Beginning with this first truth, stress should be known, or suffering occurs, we get to explore what brought us to mindfulness for this particular sitting or for in general in our lives. And we get to experience it in so many different ways at so many levels. Over and over again, we get to know how it is that we experience suffering or stress. And there's a reason this is called the gradual path. It takes time. You know, and it's helpful to have patience in as you learn what it is and what the feeling is of how stress or suffering or difficulty enters your lives, rather than just a vague, unsolvable feeling that life just isn't quite what you want it to be. So take a moment just now and see if you can connect one of your reasons for practice to any of the stress or suffering underneath that. See if you can kind of feel that. So these moments of suffering, stress, dissatisfaction, unhappiness that we experience could be thought of as friendly guides on the path towards freedom. So every time something comes up that's experienced as unpleasant or even compulsively pleasant, addictively pleasant, we could think of that as communication from us to ourselves. It's like the mind showing us what ails us, signaling what we need to pay further attention to. It's showing us where and how we cling to ways of living that just don't work, or more ways of reacting to our experience. So if we take an unexpected fall and later recognize that a particular part of the body is swollen and painful, that signals to us where the injury is, you know, where we have a broken bone that needs attention. So experiences that don't feel right are a signal to us about where freedom might be found. Some big forms of suffering that we hear about in Buddhism include what Siddhartha Gautama saw as a young man before he started the exploration that led to him becoming the Buddha. So when he left his overprotected life in the palace, for the first time as a young man, he saw the very things that his parents tried to protect him from: sickness, old age, and death. And in seeing these, he realized that human life was prone to suffering and set about to find if there was a way not to suffer, a way to end suffering. So just looking at those categories of sickness, old age, and death, we come to the first noble truth when we experience how we've suffered with illness, aging, and death of others in our lives. So working with the second noble truth, that the cause of suffering is craving, we might see that we're carrying strong, deluded views that if we do everything just right to maintain good health and stay fit, we shouldn't get seriously ill, or we should still feel young and active and great even when we're in our 70s, 80s, 90s. It's not uncommon for people to believe that the death of someone they loved should not have happened when it did. Sometimes people even search for someone or something to blame. So these can be said to be a kind of craving for things to be always satisfying, always constant. So to reach the third noble truth with these, the cessation of suffering, we actually might use the skills offered in the fourth noble truth, that the way to the cessation of suffering is the Eightfold Path. If you've never heard of the Eightfold Path before, it's a set of useful tools for working with suffering. So here's a list of the eight, and I'll describe them a little more as I give more examples. Right view, which is, by the way, what we're studying as we are hearing this talk tonight. Right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. In this case, right does not mean right versus wrong. It means the right tool for the job. In particular, we might explore our assumptions, our views, and opinions mindfully, and in the process, recognize that every living creature is subject to sickness, old age, and death. Old age if we're lucky, by the way. And despite everything we and others around us do to ensure perfect health, perfect youth, and perfect longevity, old age, sickness, and death are not really in our control. When deeply understood, this leads to a letting go, and that's the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering around sickness, old age, and death. So similar processes underlie many experiences in life. So here are some examples. Reflect for a moment if you've ever wanted, ever not wanted something to happen that was beginning to happen anyway. That ever happened to you? If so, you've experienced clinging around the birth of something. So you'll hear birth mentioned. Reflect for a moment if you've ever had trouble with something falling apart, a situation that you didn't want to change, that was changing despite what you wanted. Have you ever experienced that? If so, you've experienced clinging around aging of something in a different way. Reflect for a moment if you've ever had trouble with something ending, a job, a relationship, a pleasant phase in your life that you really enjoyed. If so, you've experienced clinging around the death of something. So if you've ever injured yourself or had an injury or illness either sneak up on you or come on quickly, you know that the pain or discomfort of a headache or feverishness or muscle pain is a message or pointer letting you know something's going on that needs your attention. So suffering comes when we are reactive to the sensations we call pain. You might be really fit and exerting your muscles a lot and just experience that as sensation, you know, not particularly painful or difficult one day. Whereas at another time, you might do the same activity and experience pain and suffering. So when you become aware of the fact that you're suffering and experiencing pain, you're experiencing the first noble truth. Suffering exists. If you then explore the second noble truth, that the cause of suffering is craving, you might find that you're craving for a constant state of bodily comfort. An aversion to discomfort might be creating the mental interpretation of these sensations in the body as pain. So turning to the fourth noble truth, the tools of the Eightfold Path, you could work with right mindfulness and just remain mindful of the body sensations as they're happening over time. And eventually those sensations might be experienced as merely sensations, throbbing, twinging, burning, without pain or without even suffering. So sometimes you can have that experience. And that brings you to a taste of the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering. So we experience other reactive responses to events in our lives, perhaps in the form of ideas like, the fact that this is happening right now to me is my fault, or it's somebody else's fault, or this shouldn't be happening. I think a lot of people are experiencing that this week. Or we may have reactive emotions to events. We can get caught up in anger, sadness, or fear. A really common form of stress or suffering is having really strong opinions about how things and people should be, and feeling disturbed when things don't turn out the way we want and people don't behave in ways we think are appropriate. So when you notice that, you're experiencing the first noble truth of stress, suffering. Perhaps you've seen yourself or someone else get caught in deep suffering by self-soothing in ways that feel really pleasant at first, but in the long run don't turn out well. Whether it's trying to self-soothe or feel better through alcohol, drugs, gambling, binge-watching TV, overeating. You know, at first it feels good, gratifying, relaxing, but when you start to become dependent on that sense pleasure to feel better, suffering emerges over time. The sense pleasure could be something that's used instead of facing difficult emotions or unpleasant bodily sensations. Or you might use it to avoid life challenges, or it could become a habit that obsessively starts to suck up time and money and obliterates mindfulness. The first noble truth is that process of finally seeing that these things really don't feel good and really don't work. But sometimes we have to see them over and over. We have to experience it, feel it over and over and over again before we finally get it, that this is suffering, and look for the cause of craving. What's the second noble truth? What's the cause of that craving? And seeing maybe that it's, you know, trying to tamp down unpleasant emotions or body sensations. Or escape. So then a number of the Eightfold Path tools in the fourth noble truth could be used to gradually move towards the third noble truth of cessation of suffering. So for example, right intention encourages us to avoid greed, cruelty, and ill will, even towards ourselves. So, and instead to practice generosity, kindness, and compassion. So you can imagine if you start to work with that, Maybe you don't do things that harm yourself. Sometimes the suffering of the First Noble Truth is much more subtle. A common example is when we expect our meditation to feel a certain way or to be a certain way, and we're hard on ourselves or disturbed when it doesn't turn out that way. We might even expect spiritual results from doing this, from sitting here and meditating. And we might start to doubt that this is working if that doesn't happen. Like, oh, I'm not getting there on the spiritual path. So once we become aware that we're experiencing those things, we're at the First Noble Truth of suffering. And we might turn to the Second Noble Truth to see what kind of craving is causing that stress of, yeah, my meditation practice just isn't what I want it to be. It could be in the form of a delusion that we know what the spiritual life is supposed to be or supposed to feel like. Could be in the form of the hindrance of restlessness and doubt in ourselves and in the practice. So we might turn again to the Fourth Noble Truth and look for tools and get support from right effort, which encourages us to work skillfully to cultivate states of mind that are helpful and maintain those states and guard and abandon unhelpful states of mind. So we might use right mindfulness to observe what is actually happening in our meditation practice instead of getting caught up in our ideas of what it's supposed to be. It can feel any way under the sun, and sometimes it can even feel chaotic, and that's part of the process too. So then through that awareness and that process, we can again possibly get to the cessation of suffering, feel that little taste of freedom, like whatever this meditation practice was, if I was in pain, if I struggled, if I thought a lot, if I saw it, I had a taste of the cessation of suffering. So we can be stressed out about our identity, who we think we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to be. We could get caught up in pleasures that don't seem, you know, negative at first. Like, it's really tempting for a lot of people to talk about other people. You know, we may think of it as, well, I'm just, you know, I'm talking about other people who aren't here, but I'm just staying in touch with what's going on at work or in, you know, with public figures. Thinking, where's the harm in that? I'm just keeping up with the latest. Or we might identify with it as a part of our sophistication to poke fun at human foibles. But when that is aimed towards individuals or groups of people, then over time we may start to see the divisiveness or the suffering, you know, someone really getting hurt by that, someone getting left out by that. So then looking for that cause, that craving again, we might see there's an edge of greed or aversion around those, that gossip or those jokes or those ways of talking about other people. And you might begin to practice right speech, which includes not engaging in gossip anymore, speaking in a way that's timely, kind, and brings people together. And by practicing with that again and again, you start to get to the Third Noble Truth in action, that, and maybe even see that relationships start to improve, or at least the damage has stopped. So as you walk this path of practice, it's common to uncover more and more and more ways in which you have stress or suffering. Again, be patient with that. It's a gradual path. More obvious ways at first and more subtle ways as you continue to practice. And maybe instead of getting disappointed in ourselves or being hard on ourselves, we could find relief in the idea that the mind can point us in the direction of freedom by showing us where it hurts and giving us the tools of the Eightfold Path to get there. So by now, maybe you have a little bit of a feeling for this Second Noble Truth of the cause of suffering, being craving. And you can maybe see how the first, second, third, and fourth Noble Truths are set up as causes and consequences. So the causes of suffering, the consequences of suffering. The cause of freedom being the Eightfold Path, the cessation of suffering, or freedom being the third Noble Truth. So in the second Noble Truth, dialing in to craving, that feeling of compulsiveness, like we've got to do it this way, this is the way we have control of our life, this is the only way we know how to do it, I can't be any other way, or clinging, like, you know, a conditioned habit of living a certain way, doing things with the aim of controlling the outcomes. So our reactions of craving and clinging in this second Noble Truth can be around wanting more of something, which is called greed, not wanting something, which is called aversion, feeling restless, like there's got to be something better than this, or just even, maybe I should get up and do the dishes instead of continuing this sitting. Oh, I need to make that phone call. Oh, I've got to do that email. Restlessness. Or regretful. Why did I say that? Why did I do that in my life? Or doubting ourselves in the practice. This isn't working. Or it's me. I'm just not good enough for this to work. Or not being able to practice because we get sleepy or dull every time we sit down to meditate. Those are hindrances. Those are things we discover in the second Noble Truth that are standing in our way. The third Noble Truth, maybe you got a little bit of feeling for the cessation of suffering, tastes of freedom coming from practicing more skillful choices that are available through this Eightfold Noble Path. So fully seeing that all conditioned experience is unsatisfying, not constant, and can't be relied on for happiness all the time. That it doesn't have any fixed nature. Just as we don't have any fixed nature, fixed, unchanging. You know, how many people have you been in your lifetime? Probably a lot already, many people. Maybe even every second, you're different. So there's no point in identifying with any of it. We can free ourselves for higher states of happiness by making the kinds of choices that release us from these forms of identification and wanting things to be always happy, always satisfying. So we're not trying for special states or, you know, altered states. We're not even trying for peace and calm in this meditation. That may happen, or, you know, lots of other things may happen. So the fourth Noble Truth of the Eightfold Path, we touched on that, and it's the way to develop ourselves and our vision, an ability to see the gross and the subtle ways that we stress or suffer, and choosing different responses. So just to summarize a little bit, right view, which is sometimes called right understanding, is what I've been talking about tonight. The Four Noble Truths, that actions have consequences. Right intention, which is sometimes very helpful, you know, to not go with greed, cruelty, or ill will. Instead, to work on generosity, goodwill, and compassion. Right speech. Is it timely? Is it kind? Does it bring people together? Does it avoid gossip? Right action. Really looking at not harming in this world, not taking what has not been given, not harming with our sexuality. Right livelihood, the way we make a living, not harming or stealing or lying or perpetrating unhelpful things with the way we make a living and the way we consume goods and resources in this world. Right effort, guarding against and abandoning unhelpful states of mind that cause suffering and instead cultivating and maintaining the helpful states of mind that we discover. Right mindfulness, this whole practice that we've been doing of paying attention to what is happening in our bodies, our breath, our feelings, our minds, our mental states, and right concentration, developing a focus. That's a path that can go very deeply. So, you know, this doesn't have to be a grim process. And, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this tonight is to help integrate these things, because I've always heard a lot of talks about the first noble truth, the second noble truth, the third, the fourth, and it kept feeling very abstract to me. Like, okay, what was that again? How does that fit together? But this whole process doesn't have to be grim. There's a musician named Betsy Rose who has a song in which she sings, "I don't practice, I just play." And I really love that. Think about how can we play with awareness on the meditation cushion and in our daily life. Maybe we could enjoy, in some sense, the discovery of previously unknown stress or suffering as that pointer. Like, here's where freedom is, right through the gateway of where you're stressing out right now. Maybe knowing that everybody else in the human race experiences these same forms of suffering, we can decide not to take it so personally. It's not I, me, mine, myself. It's human condition. And perhaps we can even find ways in which this practice of mindfulness, of paying attention on the cushion and off the cushion, is rewarding. You know, as you spend more time with it, there are these moments where you go, oh, now I get it. That's rewarding. Just this, whenever you have a taste of freedom or noticing something like, okay, I noticed that I was contracting around the pain in my knee. I noticed that I just snapped at somebody. Oh, ouch, that wasn't so good. Just that moment of being aware of it, that's a little taste of the beginning of freedom. So this process of becoming more free or liberated turns out to be not only what we do along the way, but the expression of the fulfillment of this path. I said you become an embodied, you know, you're walking around an embodied Four Noble Truths. So I hope this talk will give you a sense of the integration of these Four Noble Truths and just a perspective that could help you find your way in practice. Whatever your reasons are for mindfulness or practicing meditation. And of course the encouragement is to discover this for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Figure it out in your own experience. And, you know, use these guideposts in a way that has relevance for you. And I apologize for any mistakes that I've made in my understanding this evening. That would be my unconscious incompetence. I don't know what I don't know yet. You know, so thank you very much for your practice and for spending time tonight. And we have time for questions or comments if you have any. And I also want to just acknowledge that that's a lot of information at once. That's how the Four Noble Truths are. But it's also really simple. Suffering, the cause of it, the practice of the right tools to help you come to the end of it, that's all. So any comments, questions, thoughts? Randy will pass the mic so that other people who are listening online can hear from you. And by the way, usually when the teacher asks for questions, I'm never the one who has a question. I'm like, wait, I'm not sure. I don't know. Give me a few years to study this more. So you're also welcome to come up afterwards and talk with me if you'd prefer that. So thank you so much for coming tonight.